Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Forsyth, Georgia is what you would call a sundown town. It's a place where people of color were not welcome, and if you were there after the sun went down, you would be terrorized or worse. In 1912, the whites of the community went on a rampage, and with armed night riders, they drove the black families out of the area, and they told them never to come back. They declared Forsyth for whites only, and that's how it stayed for generations. In 1987, the segregation and racial exclusion of Forsyth was challenged with a march, and the white community responded with a loud protest. It got ugly. It got violent. Oprah Winfrey went there and did a show. We're going to play a clip from that, but be aware, this is offensive language in this audio. We got the N-word coming up. We left it in there because we thought it was important to hear exactly what happened.
We bring you today to Forsyth County, Georgia, just 30 miles north of Atlanta, which in the past few weeks has gained the reputation of being a hotbed of racism. Where did the people who come from who were shouting, "Nigger, go home"? They came from where?
Yes, ma'am. They came from, my name's Frank Shirley. I'm the head of the committee to keep Forsyth and Dawson County white.
Let him speak. Please let him speak. He has the right to speak.
Okay, the news media is covered up. There were thousands of white people that came out to join our white people's protest. This is the largest white people's protest against communism and race mixing in the last 30 years. The news media has deliberately covered up the nature of the Brotherhood marchers, many of whom are outright communists and homosexuals, and our organization was the only one that dared take a stand against them.
You don't believe that people of other races have the right to live here?
They have the right to live wherever they want to, but we have the right to choose if we want a white community also.
We're joined by Patrick Phillips, who wrote the book Blood at the Root, Racial Cleansing in America, which is a focus on Forsyth, Georgia. And Patrick, welcome to The Source.
Thank you, David. It's a pleasure to be here.
Our phone lines are open. Our listeners can call in. The number is 210-614-8980. You can email questions and comments to the source at tpr.org as we talk about this important chapter of American history. So, Patrick, you actually grew up in Forsyth. What was that like?
That's correct. My parents moved there from suburban Atlanta in 1977 when I was in the second grade. And, you know, it took a little while before I realized that there was something very different about the county. We had lived in a part of Northside Atlanta that was integrated, and my parents worked in the city. So when I got to Forsyth, I noticed that there were no black people around, that the N-word was almost the only way any of my schoolmates referred to people of color. And when I was on the school bus, I asked a kid, you know, when I was 7 years old, what happened? Why is this a white county? And that's the first time I heard the legend. And at the time, among school kids, it just went that a long, long time ago, there had been a alleged murder of a white woman. And as a result, the white people of the county had banded together and, quote, run out all the blacks in Forsyth.
And how is it today?
So today, Forsyth is, you know, much larger place. It's really integrated into suburban Atlanta. It looks like any other suburb of the city. It's 10% Latino, 8% Asian, and about 3-4% African American. So the population really swelled. And
but that still seems like a low percentage for Georgia for the number of African Americans. And it looks like we've lost our connection with the caller. And so with our guest, Patrick Phillips, we're talking about his book, Blood at the Root, A Racial Cleansing in America, and which talks about the history of Forsyth, Georgia. In 1912, the whites in the community went on a rampage, and they drove the black families out of the area. This is a story that is astonishingly similar to one that we had here in Texas, one that I have covered quite a bit, in Slocum, Texas. It was actually also in 1912, in July of 1912, when the white community there in East Texas went on a rampage against the community in Slocum, and they drove the African-American families out of the area. It happens, this is not an unusual story. But as we're able to look back on these history events, we're now trying to ask the questions like, what happened? And so are you there, Patrick? Patrick, you there?
What the fuck?
Hey, Patrick. Okay, so in the coverage of Slocum, not only was it a story of the actual event, but there was the generational cover-up of the event. As we're still trying to get Patrick back on the line, and we'll be joining him momentarily. And our phone line is open if you want to join the conversation to talk about this type of events. And it's not just it happened in Rosewood, Florida. We had in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where they actually they attacked a black town there. So this is not a one-time only event in American history. So how does this happen? Why does it happen? And Patrick, are you there?
I'm here. I'm back, David.
All right. Fantastic. Great to have you back. And while you were gone, I was talking about other events like this that have happened in American history. We know about Rosewood in Florida, Tulsa, Oklahoma, too, and also in Texas, Slocum, which is also in 1912. So this is not an unusual thing.
No, that's correct. There were episodes like this all over the country. There's a historian, Joseph Lowen, who wrote a great book, James Lowen, I think, who wrote a great book called Sundown Towns that finds evidence for that in the census records, even for stories that we're not as familiar with. I think the one thing that makes Forsyth unique is just the longevity of it, exactly as you said at the beginning, that it lasted into the 1980s, really into the mid-90s. And so when I was a child there in the 70s and 80s, not only was I hearing the story of a racial cleansing and Knight Riders and a purge, in a lot of ways it was still going on. It was still a place where black truck drivers would not stop. If a UPS driver got out of his truck in Forsyth in the 70s and 80s when I was a kid there, he was liable to be set upon by angry, you know, groups of white men. So it was something that lasted an extraordinarily long time.
And we heard that Oprah Winfrey clip, and that was pretty heated stuff.
Yeah, that was from 1987, and that was in the wake of a march that happened where after 75 years where this racial purge had been enforced violently and there had been a lot of intimidation, there was a march in January of 1987. It was really a pretty modest plan. It was a couple of miles march where a line of about 75 people, some from the Martin Luther King Center in Atlanta and a handful from inside the county, including my family, came out simply to stand up for, you know, the march was called a brotherhood march, so to stand up for peace and brotherhood and tolerance. And those protesters were met by a mob of angry local whites who threw rocks, threw bottles, chanted racist slurs, and eventually turned around the march and forced, you know, the local police shut it down because they were starting to arrest armed men in the crowd. So Oprah Winfrey came down in the weeks after that to try to find more about the story. And, you know, I think she was shocked by the overt racism she found.
Right. And even she didn't stay after the sun went down. She left right away. We're talking about the book Blood at the Root, Racial Cleansing in America. We're speaking with the author, Patrick Phillips. We invite you into our conversation as we talk about these events and how they are part of American history, what we can learn from them, and how we can try to bring some justice to these areas as well. There's still a lot to be done. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. A town in the South in 1912 was whipped up into a frenzy, and they attacked the black community, driving them from the area. Knight Riders declare Forsyth County for whites only in Georgia, and it stayed that way for generations. And it's not a unique event. We're joined by the author of Patrick Phillips, the author of the book Blood at the Root, A Racial Cleansing in America. And so, Patrick, what happened to the people who were driven out of the town? I mean, like, today, I mean, have they received any sort of compensation for lost property?
No, there was some investigation of that question in 1987, and the governor's office in the state of Georgia convened a commission to look into this. And the report that they issued in 87 said that there was not enough evidence to support claims for reparations. Now, you know, I've gone back and looked at that. A journalist before me named Elliot Jaspin has looked at it, and there's really a lot of evidence that people who left the county, many of them sold at incredibly low prices, you know, depressed prices, and got lowball offers and made, you know, the best of what they could get. There were also people who simply walked away from their land. And a lot of those land lots, there's no record of a sale, there's no record of any kind of compensation. But then over the decade that followed, some of those same lots suddenly appear in other transactions where white neighbors have simply quietly, slowly absorbed it into their own property. And then they sell it, and there's no one there to really raise any objection, given that the purge was so successful.
In Rosewood, Florida, they set up a fund for the descendants, a college fund. Same thing happened in Oklahoma. So there is a way to provide some sort of reparations for the descendants that's not, you know, like, hey, I won the lottery, but somehow to try and make some sort of amends for this lost property, because you can't have a pogrom like this where you drive people off of their land en masse without the cooperation of the local law enforcement and the government.
Yeah, I think that's correct. You know, the sheriff in 1912 in Forsyth was a man named Bill Reed, who was one of the founders of the Ku Klux Klan chapter there in the mid-20s. The judge in one of the trials for a boy who was accused of the murder of this young white girl, the judge in that trial later led the lynching of Leo Frank in 1915 in Atlanta, in Marietta. And so, you know, there's no question that justice was not done during this time. And, you know, not only do you not find any attempts at reparation or any sort of public apology about this in Forsyth, the story's really largely wiped out of mind. You know, when I go down there now, there's a statue to a man named Hiram Parks Bell on the town square. He was a white supremacist congressman from Georgia who was part of the Democrats who in the 1870s helped expel black members from Washington. So, and that's the guy who celebrated on the town square just a few, you know, very within sight of the place where a man was lynched in 1912. So it's one of the things that motivated me in trying to write the book was this awareness that not only had this crime been perpetrated, but the descendants of the white people who took part in the mobs have really succeeded in erasing all traces that had ever happened when you go there.
All right, let's get some callers on the air, 210-614-8980. And Scott is on the line. Hey, Scott, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing good. Go ahead.
No, so I lived in Texas for about 30 years, and I ended up moving to Warner Robins, Georgia. I worked out at Kelly, and when we got sent over there, you know, I'm married to a Hispanic woman, and I've never experienced as much racism as I have living in that part of the country. I mean, it was just, and, you know, people would talk to me very openly thinking that because I was Anglo that, you know, I kind of subscribed to the same belief, but it was just, it was amazing. And I've been back 10 years. And when I left 10 years ago, I remember a lady showing me pictures of her kids' school prom, and they were all white kids. And I was like, well, where's the other kids in the school? It's the school prom. I mean, there's black and white kids in this school. And she says, well, we run a fire hall, and we have our own prom. I mean, it's still, I don't think anything's changed over there.
Scott,
if it has, it's been really slow.
Scott, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. So, Patrick, let me ask you about that. Since you're a white guy, you're writing a book about this. Did anyone ask you, like, hey, man, why are you writing this book?
You know, I have an interesting point of view on the whole story because I'm from there, and the caller's experience of having people say racist things to him, assuming his agreement because he's white, because he's Anglo, as he says, I had very much that same experience in that I'm from Forsyth County. When I went back, you know, I had a lot of, I could talk about my elementary school teachers, my baseball coaches, and so I had a lot of rapport with some of the white people I was talking about. And they frequently, I had that same experience of them saying things that shocked me with the racism that lay behind it, but they simply assumed that we were on the same page because of our skin color. So it was appalling, but at the same time, I also felt it gave me a little bit of a window into some of this that might have been difficult for someone. You know, this is of great concern to the descendants of the black community who were forced out, but no black man would go to Forsyth and try to find out this story, at least until very recently. So I felt a certain amount of an obligation to try to find out about it because of exactly what the caller said, that I had a kind of unusual ability to get people to talk about this.
Another caller with Jim. Hey, Jim, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I wanted to, the case in Oklahoma, that was almost exclusively the KKK. I want to find out if that's similar with these other massacres.
All right, thank you, Jim.
So that's a really great question, Jim. One of the myths that I was raised with, one of the stories, was that the Klan did this. And I think that story was dramatic. It was something that was repeated all the time when I was a kid, and I just took it at face value. And what I found when I started looking more closely is that there's absolutely no way the Klan was responsible for the events of 1912 in Forsyth. And the reason is that the Klan was defunct in 1912. It had been prosecuted out of existence in the 1870s. And what we think of as the modern Klan, the white-sheeted Knight Rider with a torch, was really invented by Hollywood in 1915 when D.W. Griffith made his film Birth of a Nation. So there was no Klan in Forsyth in 1912. And that was one of the moments where I realized that I had to dig deeper, because if it wasn't the Klan, then suddenly that old excuse that this monstrous group was responsible for this didn't work. And, of course, that left you turning to look and realize this was done by the people of the county.
Right, but it's also not that far from Stone Mountain, which is considered the birthplace of the Klan.
Yeah, and that is where the modern Klan was inaugurated on Thanksgiving night, 1915. Yeah, it's very close to Stone Mountain. And absolutely, in 1915, this area of the country is the epicenter of the Klan movement. In 1912, that movement has not begun. So that story, I came to regard that as the kind of story that helps people feel a little better, because it lets you deflect responsibility from your own ancestors, from your own people, and think, well, there was this terrible hate group, and that's who was responsible for this. But the reality, when I looked at it more closely and looked at the document, is this was something done neighbor against neighbor. The black community forced out were often people who the white folks in Forsyth had known all their lives. It was servants, sharecroppers, people who had picked cotton for the farmer next door. So this was something that was much more intimate than I had always assumed.
Another caller with Glenn. Hey, Glenn, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. I'm from Little Rock, Arkansas, and I, from a very early age, like 7 years old, befriended an old black lady. She was quite beautiful to look at, even at her age then, and she would tell me stories. That sort of started everything for me. She was a slave, and she had become a school teacher because she was the only black person for many, many miles there who could read or write. And so they made her superintendent of schools, and she started to teach. She touched me so deeply at 7 years of age, explaining to me that most of the people who came the first day of school to learn to read and write in the first grade were grown, sometimes even old, black people, as she was. And as I grew up, at that time, when I was a child and I knew her, it was black and white water fountains, restaurants that blacks could not go in. As late as in the 1970s, I moved to Eureka Springs, Arkansas in 1972. Nigger, don't let the sun go down on you in this town. Signs were all over the Ozarks. And in hearing all of this about Slocum, oh, by the way, my alma mater is Little Rock Central High. I'm 7 years old. At 2468, we don't want to integrate that whole thing. I thought I would never go to that school at one point.
Right.
And when I moved here to Texas, I was shocked because not only were the blacks subjected to a lot of treatment like this, but the Hispanics were too. And I had no idea about that. So my dream right now, I'm in ill health, is to get to go to the museum that was mentioned in the earlier segment. I I just have to see it. I have to go through that. But I actually experienced so much.
Glenn, I got to wrap you up. It was great talking with you. Please call back. We'd love to hear more of your stories. He's talking about the National Museum of African American History and Culture we talked about in the first half. But so Patrick Phillips, your book, A Blood at the Root, The Racial Cleansing in America. I mean, the story, if you hadn't written this book, would people try to keep this hidden? Real quick.
Well, I think there is a certain amount of anxiety in the county about this being exposed, but I think we're at that moment where a lot of what's changing is I think a lot of white America is starting to turn and face the legacy of this and to realize that the way forward, if we want truth and reconciliation, you know, as Nelson Mandela so brilliantly dubbed it, we have to go through. You can't have the reconciliation without first turning and facing the truth. So, you know, I think that I hope my book is part of a whole wave of these kinds of stories coming out and people turning and facing the reality of how the places where they live came to be the way they are, you know, in 2016.
Because the stories are told, but it's important that we get it right. We keep the documentation there and so that people can't just dismiss it as, well, maybe it didn't actually happen. Patrick Phillips, thank you so much. The book is Blood at the Root, A Racial Cleansing in America. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for tuning us in.
Thanks, David.